Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me, I've waited long enough.
As I gaze upon the beautiful abyss of outer space, I can't help but reminisce on how we held on to our faith. Gold is how we stayed till the day that time would say that Toonami's back, bitches. Pardon my francais. Now every week the absolution blasts off while the masses watch as an old familiar mascot by the name of Tom takes a seat and kicks the broadcast off, making major moves like a triple cut backdrop. I still remember watching Nebion doing damage and thinking, damn, is Goku ever gonna reach Namek? Obviously I got a lot of love for the classics. The speed at which I used to run home to watch was the fastest. Absolution moving, flying through the galaxy. Toonami's back with a slap in the face to those who doubted it. Remain Toonami faithful till the day that I am gray and old, and like a Super Saiyan's glow, I will always stay gold.
This is Nerdcore Absolution. Come to peace with your inner nerd, and after you can stay gold like T.O.M. Chilling out the galaxy and we know him.
From a perch among the stars, as viewers await the moment when the spirit bomb can charge.
Hey there, my Tommy generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative. I am your prom Tom captain, Thomas Prontom Mattis, and this is episode 137 of The Prerogative. And on this episode, we continue our three episode look at everybody's favorite DC superhero teenage group, the Teen Titans, with a look at the animated adaptation of its most famed story, or at least one of its most famed stories. I am, of course, talking about the Judas Contract with 2017's Teen Titans Judas Contract. That and more on this episode of Tom's Prerogative. And as I may mention, this is the second of three episodes in which we are focusing on the Teen Titans, the much beloved teenage superhero group of DC Comics, which features Robin slash Nightwing, Starfire, Raven, Cyborg, Wonder Girl, Beast Boy, Speedy, Kid Flash. As I'm trying to think over the years of who it's included multiple Wonder Girls, because you know you have Donna Troy Wonder Girl, and then you had Cassandra Sandmark Wonder Girl, which is my personal favorite version of Wonder Girl. It's included Supergirl, it's included Superboy, multiple Robins. You know, of course, the first one was Dick Grayson, who was Robin, but then very much after that, in fact, it was with this storyline that he sort of debuted as Nightwing. I've seen conflicting reports about that from different people, so if somebody can, like, help me out on that, that would be, because again, I've actually never, I shouldn't say never read Teen Titans Judas Contract. I've definitely very much not read, like, the beginning of the new Teen Titans run. I think I've seen one issue. It's definitely something to where I believe the Judas Contract was, like, I think it's maybe second year. Because I've seen collections, and, like, the Judas Contract comes in number 4. And if the, like, the trade paperbacks are, like, 6 issues, that means that it came towards the tail end of the second year. So please, anybody can help me on that. Because again, that's sort of another blind spot. I mean, there's so many comics that I love to where most of my knowledge comes from many of the great podcasters out there that do comic book podcasts, like the Michael Baileys and the Shag Matthews of the world, the irredeemable Shag, I should say. A lot of the people over at the Fire Water podcast, and Andrew Leland, Hey Kids Comics, just to name drop a few because I'm tacky. Because I'm tacky. I've had that song stuck in my mind the past couple days. Can't you tell? Because I certainly am tacky. I will. I don't know if that's something I should be proud of, but yeah, I'm tacky, and I own it. moving away from obvious ignorance, that is obvious. But like I said, like things like that, like a particular 80s DC. I've not had the opportunity to really read it a lot. A lot of it is secondhand knowledge. I do believe I have read the Juice Contract, but it was ages ago. In fact, I believe it was when I lived in Florida, and I picked up a trade paperback version of it. And then I checked out from the library, because Largo Library had... I mean, I don't know if it's grown... from what it was, but I remember, like, I started checking stuff out from the library. It was, like, a quarter of a row was, like, trade paperbacks, and, like, by the time we left Florida, and I remember the last time I checked it out from the library, it was, like, literally this one, like, shelf, like, all nothing but graphic novels, and, like, they had so many, and, of course, it was part of the, sort of, Pinellas County library system, which was a really great library system. But I remember checking it out from there, and the only thing that is sort of sticking in my mind was Cyborg, or at least how Cyborg got captured being electrocuted in the ship. For some reason, I do remember that, and that's why I think when it happens to Blue Beetle here, who is the obviously Cyborg stand-in in this case, we'll get to more on that. Yeah, that's. I think I remember that more. So, I have knowledge of the story. Again, Wikipedia. And mind you, not that I recently looked it up. Like, you know, Wikipedia, at the anybody can speak of, is, like, a great place to, like, to learn knowledge about plots and what has gone on in comics. Not that everything is true. But again, you combine that with other knowledge. And like I said, it's one of my blind spots. It's certainly something I would like to... Like, I have a list of comic books or comic book collections that I'd like to accumulate, as far as, like, I would love to get, like, 1980s Batman and Detective Comics. 1990s Superman, as far as, like, the entire collection. You know, if you listen from Crisis to Crisis, I don't know how you can't want to collect the entire 90s run of Superman. So, you know, you have those spaces there, and one of them definitely is wanting to get Teen Titans collections. Now, it's definitely a lot more easier these days to collect these comics with things like Comicology, which I highly suggest using. I've only in the past couple, 6 months, started to use Comicology a lot more. Part of that came from when Tarot 100 came out about a year ago, actually. It was a code for Comicology. And then I started to slowly use it there. Of course, it also helped to get a new phone, which could much easier use Comicology. And, yeah. So, it's been much easier to read comics because I, of course, the new phone. So, I've definitely, in a way, been collecting comics again, but not as, you know, it's on a issue-by-issue basis, unless it's a particular issue which I collect. Like, for instance, Spider-Man, Renew Your Vows, which is the best comic book going today. Now, obviously, we're not going to sit here and talk about Marvel comics, particularly when we're talking about DC characters, so... and not that I'm getting completely paid by Comicology whatsoever for this pimpage. But, you know, Judas Contract has, I think, a very special place in a lot of Teen Titan fans' hearts for a lot of good reason. It was definitely a different type of story in particular in the 80s. And again, it really, when you look at it as a whole, you look at something that makes it very obvious to why this and the X-Men over in Marvel were sort of the two big franchises that were extremely popular in the mid to late 80s. Marv Wolfman and George Perez did an absolutely magnificent job. And in fact, if you bought the Blu-ray or DVD or Blu-ray DVD pack of this movie, there is a special feature of Marv Wolfman and George Perez sitting down talking about creating the Teen Titans, what they wanted the Teen Titans to be, talking about the Judas Contract, talking about Terra, talking a bit about Deathstroke, and of course there is a Deathstroke feature also on here where Marv Wolfman and George Perez go more into what they wanted Deathstroke to be. Now, I say that being said, considering that, as we'll get into with the review, this Deathstroke is very different, and there are, again, it's definitely an adaptation, because they're also combining different elements with this film. You know, that's the thing about DC's new animated film series is, again, they're combining definitely character designs and costume designs from the New 52. But, particularly with the Teen Titans, you see so many different influences. You know, you do have them wanting to strictly adapt the storyline as it was, but at the same time, definitely being influenced by Teen Titans' popularity with the Teen Titans animated series that happened in the 2000s. There's some Young Justice influence in here. You know, Blue Beetle is, I think, primary of that. And mind you, that's what the sisters didn't say, that the Blue Beetle comic was bad. You know, when Reyes debuted, and this version of Blue Beetle debuted, a lot of people loved them. And I've gotten some of those first issues, and they were really, really good. And again, being a Guyver fan also sort of attracted me to this character, because it's very Guyver-esque. It's a living armor that is attached to Reyes. Again, you have that Guyver feel. Jamie, I was completely blanking on the name there for a second. But, Jamie Reyes, again, when you look at this version of Blue Beetle, because, you know, this is the third version. There was a Golden Age, and then there was Silver Age Blue Beetle, who was one shot by Maxwell Lords. He was a prominent figure in Justice League International, which is a very good comic. And I could use this moment to pimp the Justice League Blahaha podcast featuring the Irredeemable Shag and others from the Fire and Water podcast, but I'm not going to. Because, I've pimped enough as it is. Oh, wait, I already did. Darn it. Obviously. Pimpage of friends complete. But, Jamie Reyes, again, being a third Blue Beetle, and like I said, it's that, that's the best way, it's very Guyver-esque. And for those who don't know what I'm talking about when I say Guyver-esque, there's my first anime, in fact, Bio Booster Armor Guyver. Which I always is like one of the closest things you have to like an American superhero, in a way. But, in Bio Booster Armor Guyver, what happens is the kid finds this armor unit that attaches itself to him, and it's like that the armor is living. And it's very different. There's really never been another instance of where an armor unit is actually living. There's been, cybernetic, and it's AI, and stuff like that, but it's never been an organic living armor that is attached. And so that was in Bio Booster Armor Guyver, and, with Blue Beetle here, again, it's an supposedly organic living armor as well as a mind of its own. I mean, it's not exactly like Bio Booster Armor. I mean, as they show here, the armor, the Blue Beetle armor, a lot of times has a mind of its own, and it's hard to keep under control. Well, that actually is some instances, but, it's not, there are differences and subtle differences. You know, the Guyver unit, which can go out of control, but it's only when, you know, the brain has been destroyed and or the host has lost consciousness, as in an episode during the 12 episode OVA, which we covered, for those who remember a couple months ago. I do believe it was within the past year where I reviewed BioBoost Armor Guyver, the 12 episode series. And, you know, again, it was that episode where the brain, you know, it was Enzyme who, like, destroyed half his brain, and he was facing his father, and he didn't know what he did, because the armor then, at that point, took over control. And, they actually had two cases of that with Enzyme, both in, like, the first six, and then second six. But the second six was the one with his father, where he was forced to destroy his father, and he couldn't remember it afterward, because, you know, the armor had taken control, even though half his head was gone. But, you know, as opposed to this, Blue Beetle, which, mind you, less gorier head damage, you know, where the armor will attack by itself, and, like, you know, you have Jamie arguing with it. So, that definitely, from the comic, becoming popular, being used in Young Justice, being a part of New 52, that's definitely part of it. To where these different adaptations are influencing what gets put in, what gets in. So it's definitely this mixture. And so it's going to be interesting when we get into review to talk about it. How they use that, whether I like it, whether or not. I don't want to give it away just yet. But, so there's that. But, you know, Judas Contract, to just finish rounding out the discussion about it, that I have not really discussed because I've gotten sidetracked by talking about James Reyes and Guyver, and because it's anime. Woohoo! And the unfortunate pimpage that I can't stop myself from doing. But, you know, Judas Contract was one of those premier Teen Titans stories that everybody talks about. You know, Tara's infiltration, her betrayal of the Teen Titans, yet still being such a memorable mark for so many fans. And again, you know, the Teen Titans erecting a statue of her, sort of like, you know, she is family, even though she's betrayed us, she's still family. And sort of that, the whole storyline that went forward definitely influenced and impacted the Teen Titans stories going forward, and it certainly impacted fans. You know, it's definitely one of those things, you talk to a fan and they tell you you're a Teen Titan fan, definitely one of those stories that come up that they always say they love. So it has such a cultural impact as far as Teen Titans fans and DC fans and all of that. And, you know, again, the deeper, darker issues of social apathy, which is a word I think I just made up, but, you know, insanity, craziness, people using what each other, what it means to be a family, all these are things that are definitely went on with this story, and I think that's why it remains such an impactful story, you know, because again, like, who is a villain, who isn't, what makes somebody a villain, you know, because again, Tara Infiltrator, loss of trust when somebody betrays you, yet still loving them as family, you know, the bonds that form a family, you know, because again, this is, again, we're still part of that Teen Titans growing period of them growing as a family, as it was in the comics. Again, this is a lot more secondhand knowledge I get from listening to fans talk about Teen Titans, the new Teen Titans, excuse me, and those stories. Because again, I haven't had as much of a opportunity to read it. But we do have the movie, so we are about 20 minutes into this recording. Minus the stuff I'll probably cut. But I think it's time for a break to, you know, so I can, you know, collect myself. Because now I have Guyver on the mind. It's bad enough that I've gotten Weird Al's Tacky on my mind. But now I have Guyver on my mind. So I'm going to collect myself. I'm going to send you off at a... I'm going to play some promos for some more friends. Because I can't stop talking about other podcasts but my own. Or I should say, I can't stop talking about other people's podcasts. Placing them above my own. Bad comedy. So I'm going to play a couple promos, but when we come back, it's time for us to get into Justice League Judas Contract.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Steph.
What?
Have you ever read a Superman comic?
Not in the last few hours.
Oh, I was just checking, right? Just checking.
Hey everyone, my name is Michael Bailey, and I have been a fan of Superman for as long as I can remember. In 1987, I started collecting the Superman comics as a going concern, which led me down a long and winding comic book-filled path to 2007, when I first started podcasting. Well, it's 2017, and because it's been 10 years since I started podcasting, and 30 years since I started reading Superman full-time, I thought it might be fun to start a new show called It All Comes Back to Superman. It All Comes Back to Superman will be my monthly reaffirmation of my Kryptonian faith, where I will pick out something about the Man of Steel and discuss it. Sometimes I'll be alone. Sometimes I'll have a guest. No matter how many people get involved, Superman will be the focus. It All Comes Back to Superman is part of the Fortress of BaileyTube Podcasting Network. New episodes will drop on the 28th of every month. This show and all of the other programs that are part of the Fortress of BaileyTude Podcasting Network can be found at www.fortressofbaileytude.com.
Batman Nightcast, a thrilling new podcast from the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Hosted by Ryan Daly
and Chris Franklin. Nightcast chronicles the Caped Crusaders' adventures in Batman and Detective Comics after Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Highlights from this legendary era include
Batman number 400,
Legends,
Mike Barr and Alan Davis,
Batman Year 1,
Batman Year 2,
Max Allen Collins, the new Jason Todd, Millennium?
You're not doing this right. Let me take over. Alan Grant and Norm Breyfogle.
Alan Grant from Jurassic Park?
Did you hear me say Norm freaking Breyfogle?
Oh, yeah.
Son of the Demon.
The Killing Joke.
A Death in the Family.
Batman Year 3.
A Lonely Place of Dying.
Alan Grant, Alan Davis, Max Allen Collins. Why are there so many people named Alan from this era of Batman?
The Rise of Tim Drake.
Legends of the Dark Knight.
And that's just up until 1989.
Did anything exciting happen with Batman after that?
You'll have to tune in to find out.
Batman Nightcast, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Find it on iTunes and at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Oh, we forgot to mention your favorite issue, when Batman fires Dick Grayson.
You want to find another co-host?
Get right into it. Teen Titans, The Judas Contract, directed by Sam Liu, produced by James Tucker, screenplay by Ernie Altbach, Of course, Judas Contract, originally by Marv Wolfman, George Perez, it was released March 31st, 2017 at WonderCon. It was actually shown, and then the United States full release was on April 4th, 2017. It starred Stuart Allen as Damian Wayne / Robin, Teresa Farmiga as Raven, Brandon Soho returned as Garfield Logan / Beast Boy, Jake T. Austin returned as James Reyes, Blue Beetle, Kyrie Walgren as Corey / Starfire, Sean Mayer as Dick Grayson / Nightwing, Christina Ricci as Tara Markov / Tara, Miguel O'Farrell in his very last role, or at least one of his very last roles. It was actually when he was announced that he was returning after he'd already done his work. And he basically, he'd done the work on this show and he was announced. And then several days later, unfortunately, he passed away of throat cancer. So this is one of his final performances. And I got lost in talking about Blue Beetle and about the Judas Contract. And I sort of forgot to mention that at the beginning. I really apologize because it was a sad thing. You know, gets announced and then right after it, Miguel passes away. And so this is, again, it's like it's one of those last works of an actor that people get to see. But he returns as Slade Wilson / Deathstroke, Greg Henry as Sebastian Blood / Brother Blood, Meg Foster as Mother Mayhem, and you also have several returning people from their Young Justice roles, you know, Crispin Freeman as Roy Harper / Speedy, Masaiah Moyo as Karen Beecher / Bumblebee, Jason Sprach as Wally West / Kid Flash, and even Kevin Smith is in here as himself at the very end. So, I think it's we'll start with things that I liked. Right off the bat, I think that they captured the spirit of the Judas Contract story. And I think that really helps make the entire story go. And you know, as I made mention before, this is an adaptation because it's adaptating a lot. I mean, it's adaptating Judas Contract. But again, it's also having influences from New 52, Young Justice, the Teen Titans animated series. So, like, the more of the romance between... Not that that wasn't in the original story, but much more... toned down, but the fact that they kiss and all of that definitely felt like a larger influence from the Teen Titans animated series of the 2000s. You know, Blue Beetle, as I've talked essentially about already, being influenced from Young Justice, same Damian Wayne's being an influence from not just New 52, but also from sort of the movie franchise of the sort of new series of DC animated movies. And we'll get to more on that. But again, I think they captured the spirit. They changed some things up. They played more with the, I think, romantic reaction relationship between Beast Boy and Tara. And definitely changed her from being a sociopath and just all-around crazy person, as she was in the original, to being more of a... trying to think of a character that you have more sympathy for. Being that they show her multiple times being abused and bullied and beaten up by her small town for being a witch, as they show, who's afraid of her powers. And again, I think they did that to great effect of also showing why she's with Deathstroke. You know, She's a 15. She's not just a 15-year-old hopelessly in love with an much more mature man with sort of puppy dog teenage love. This is, as they put in it, it's somebody who raises her, you know, saves her life, raises her, teaches her how to fight, teaches her how to infiltrate, teaches her, you know, how to use her powers, or at least helps her use her powers. And that makes the betrayal by Deathstroke at the end, by the way, spoiler alert for, I really need to get better at saying these things. Spoiler alert for those who've not seen the movie, have never heard of The Judas Contract. I guess I just assume that everybody listening to this has read it or knows of The Judas Contract and knows of betrayal. Betrayal! Betray him! Because I don't have the button ready. I need to get better at that. I have a whole soundboard, and that's a button. Anyways, moving on from my complete not being ready for certain jokes. but, you know, again, all of that makes the betrayal by Deathstroke, I think, actually work a little bit better. Or at least for this movie's case, it does. It's hard to say, because from my understanding of the original story, the original betrayal was, you know, just, she's crazy. You know, Deathstroke shows more love and compassion towards, you know, his son Joseph, because again, in the original story, you also had Jericho, who, by the way, he makes an appearance in this. He's one of Brother Blood's test subjects, and there's actually an end credit scene to where it shows that he's actually still alive. And so make of that what you will for a future Teen Titan animated movie. But, and you know, in the original, when Hive has captured the Teen Titans, or Deathstroke captured them for Hive, it's Nightwing and Jericho that rushes in to rescue them. And at some point in that process, Deathstroke shows compassion for his son, and that drives Terra to think that he's gone soft. Again, and there's a lot more to it, but again, that deals more with her being a sociopath and her own insanity. And again, with that story, so to sit there and say that this is necessarily better than that, I can't say. You know, it was on my mind, definitely, but I realize I can't say that because, again, there are really two, they're, it's the same story, but approached from two different ways and with different histories. And here, because of sort of the DC movie history that this is all interconnected with, this works really well. And like I said, I do think, though, that she's way more sympathetic in this type of storyline because of the abuse and the bullying that she had to deal with because of her powers. Because Deathstroke saved her. Which, again, it makes it, it's not just blind 15-year-old completely crushing on a much older, mature man. There's, you know, again, this is, there's a father, not fatherly, but sort of a daughterly love there. As in, you know, daughter loving sort of a father figure. But again, because it's not a father figure, that allows it to become, go much, not deeper, but approach a more sexual level for Terra that you do definitely understand. Again, that whole being in love with a much more mature man who's more of a father figure, all of those things, again, playing with her psyche, and I think they did a decent enough job. Again, it's a movie. If this was a television series, they'd have a lot more time to investigate that. But again, that's something we'll get to in a couple minutes as far as that. And by that I mean talking about this being a movie as opposed to a television series. But for the time that they have, and again, that's another thing, I think they paced the movie very well. Never was bored, never, you know, everything was very interesting, that also helps. But I thought the movie was very well paced. But again, so for everything with Tara, again, it's a different, because of a different history, different storyline, and a lot of different things, it's a different Tara. But I thought, again, they still captured that larger spirit of what the Judas Contract was, for the most part, about. Again, Tara being the infiltrator, you know, starting to actually care about the Teen Titans, which she's been asked to infiltrate, and sort of her own shortcomings, own not mortality, but sort of her own insanity getting the best of her, and sort of the tragedy that is her death. I think, again, like I said, they're two different storylines because of their history. And by history, I mean the continuity that leads up to them, this having the more movie universe continuity, while that being the comic book universe, comic book universe continuity. But, you know, and as I mentioned, she's definitely a more sympathetic character. And because of that, I think it makes her death, again, spoiler, she dies, and I'm trying not to laugh about that, I'm trying to be serious here, but I think it makes her death that much more tragic, and I think it makes Beast Boy's words at the end of the movie, about her that much more poignant. I think I really enjoyed the overall theme of family, again, and I think that's why they also played at the beginning, beginning of the movie, they have the clip of, like, a couple years before of Dick Grayson as Robin and Speedy and Kid Flash and Bumblebee, with Beast Boy, mind you, saving Starfire as she was trying to escape her captives. And that seems like it's out of place in this film, outside of establishing, you know, Corey and Dick's relationship and why she's in love with him and why she's ultimately moving in with him. But it actually is well connected with sort of the overall theme of family, which I think they do very well in sort of approaching it through the individual characters' stories. Now, again, and mind you, they do have all these individual stories that are going on with all of the characters, that work very well as far, again, not as necessarily filler, but it's like, you know, we're taking a small little break here, something that's going on with this character while this larger story is going on. But it actually, all of them tie very well to the theme of a family. You know, Corey and Dick are going off to get their own apartment. Are they leaving the Teen Titans? But they're not leaving the Teen Titans. You know, Damian still trying to figure out how to work well with the team overall. And being snarky as hell and loving it. Or so him being snarky as hell and me loving it. You know, Jamie Reyes missing his family, really not being able to be with them because, again, him and his father, who fight a lot, which causes the bug, you know, the armor to react defensively against him. And him telling his story of wanting to be with the Teen Titans to gain control of the armor so that he could be with his family. But in the process, forming another family, Beast Boy, be sort of the goofball of the family and doing everything he can to try to make Tara understand that they are all family and that relationship. There's that overall theme that keeps playing of family. You know, that even in betrayal by Tara, they still consider her family. It's why they put up a, you know, they sort of hide what she did, and for the most part. You know, because, again, you're going back to that at the end where Beast Boy is talking to Kevin Smith, and it's like, you know, we all have, he mentions demons, so it's very obvious that he's sort of like, she obviously has some demons, but, like, she's still a hero. And that's a very important part to the theme of, like, again, she is family. Even though she betrayed them, they still consider her family, because that's what families do. You know, even in the rough times, they love each other. And it's the bond that keeps them grounded on this earth. And so I love that theme. I thought it worked very well in conjunction with Terra's story and sort of Deathstroke's story, and again how Deathstroke is using her. Which, again, and that's all connected with, again, like I said, this movie universe continuity, which is another thing I like. I like how it's connected to the movie universe. Again, it's one of the things I actually considered about, because I knew I wanted to review this movie. And before I made the decision just to do the Teen Titans stuff, you know, I was thinking, like, oh man, if I want to do this movie, I really need to watch and review Son of Batman and Batman Bad Blood, because there's so many things that are in these movies that are interconnected to this movie. You know, in particular, Son of Batman, which sort of establishes Deathstroke as Damian Wayne's sort of arch nemesis. And again, it makes a much different for this film as far as why Deathstroke is doing this, as opposed to going after the Teen Titans because, you know, he wants revenge on his son, as it is in the comic book universe. Here, it's, you know, he sees the Teen Titans as sort of Damian Wayne's team, and he wants his revenge against Damian Wayne's. He also hates all the Batman characters, because he feels that, you know, they helped take his spot and his takeover of the League of Assassins from being complete. Again, that all deals with Son of Batman, which, by the way, I really enjoyed. Again, we'll review that at a later date. But again, that whole interconnection there, not just to Teen Titans versus Justice League, but that's connected as well. So I love that connection. Like I said, I love all the individual stories. I love its connection to, I think, an overall theme of family. I love the action scenes. I thought the action was on point, very fluid. Tell what's going on. I thought the choreography of the action was very on point. You know, you go to, like, the final fight to where it's Deathstroke versus Dick and Damian, and, like, countering and that. And again, the action was very fluid in that, and just very exciting. And the same could be said for, again, showing how the Teen Titans started to work as a team to fight Brother Blood, you know, because it was him versus Starfire and Raven and Beast Boy and Blue Beetle. And I thought that worked very well. I also love that they included more action scenes. There were many great action scenes. There was, you know, both times they're infiltrating Hive headquarters, both at the beginning and where they were going to the one scientist. And again, I thought showed everybody as equal parts of the team. And the action was very engaging in that standpoint. Then, of course, you have the Deathstroke degradation fight, which was absolutely amazing. I loved how that fight went. I love how it all told a story of Nightwing chasing him. Dick, like, oh, I got away from him. No, you didn't. And that goading, and then Dick using his intelligence to overall escape Deathstroke by making him think he killed him. Which then also leads to why he ultimately has to, you know, sacrifice Terra. Because, again, they want a complete set. Well, always complete a contract. Sorry, hun. Again, so all that's connected, and I think they did a great job there in telling that story. I think the art overall was really well done. The art and animation, for that matter, both were really well done. Love all of the character designs. Didn't see one character design I didn't like. I like that they went with the sort of traditional, classic Terra costume, as opposed to just trying to redesign her. Again, as I've stated before, I love all the other characters' designs. I love that they went with the red and black sort of new 52 Nightwing costume, which I think is better than the... Of course, I think any Nightwing costume, most people agree, is better than his original 1980s Nightwing costume. So, I overall enjoyed the art. I thought it was very fluid. I'm trying to think, is there anything else I like? Because I really did. I love the story. For all the reasons I made mention before with capturing the spirit, all the characters' individual stories, tying to the theme of family, I think it makes it a very enjoyable watch. But with that, I think we'll go into the stuff I didn't like. And I made mention earlier, I think one of the core problems, though, with this is sort of a problem that Teen Titans and Teen Titans versus Justice League also had. And that is, this really feels more like individual episodes of a television series put together to form a movie. Or as the Japanese would call it, an OVA. If this was a Japanese anime and not an American anime, it would be called an OVA. Actually, I think it is. It's considered an original home video release. Well, it's considered, we call it direct to video, so I guess it'd be a DTV. It's a DC Universe animated original movie series. Again, that's the continuity that it's sort of following. But the reason I get to this is, as I may mention, while I liked how they approached the theming and everything, and I thought they captured the spirit, there's definitely also still a lot left to be wanted. Like, you know, these storylines, you could see this entire story being played over a 6 to 12 episode season of an animated series. And the same could be said for, like I said, the movie we did last episode, Teen Titans versus Justice League. And it's definitely something to where, again, it feels like it's leaving stuff on the table that could deepen it even more. Like, it's good as it is, but it could be that much more greater if it had the time to delve more deeply into these themes and into the characters' more inner workings and their stories. And their psychology, or the psychological aspects of what the characters are going through, I should say. Because I can speak today. I really can. I can promise you. I really do. So you have that to where it doesn't have the time to really dive into those intricacies that change something from being good to great. Because there's so much story to tell, and they're not quite giving you bullet points. They are being a lot more invested than that, and giving a lot more information than that, but there's also still a lot more story to go through, so you have that. And that's really, I think, the only thing that really brings the story down, because again, ultimately, this doesn't have as epic of a feel as it should have. It's good, but it's just not epic And, like, this is a storyline that feels like it should be epic. You know, like, this is the Judas contract. This is the ultimate betrayal by Terra of the Teen Titans. You know, somebody who they consider their friend, and she helped Deathstroke turn them into Brother Blood, who wants to use their powers. And I guess that's the other criticism, is the main villain feels like Deathstroke. Like, Brother Blood doesn't feel like the ultimate villain. And, I mean, I guess it's this way in the Judas contract as well. But again, it's not the main villain. It's just a means to the end for the main, the person who feels like the main villain, that being Deathstroke. I don't think that they made Brother Blood feel strong enough to, I don't know. He felt weak. And I think he could have, this movie could have used him feeling a bit more dangerous, a bit more like a threat than it was just Deathstroke. And he got taken out, I think, a bit too quickly as well. But yeah, I definitely think him being he's supposed to seem like the main villain, but he really feels like the sub-boss, you know, he's the mini-boss, as opposed to the main boss, which is Deathstroke. And again, there are some shortcomings with the animation. Again, crowd size is an issue. And I think the last thing I'll talk about as far as things I don't like is, again, music takes a bad seat in this animation. You know, I really can't sit there and tell you anything about any of the score or any of the music. I mean, I had to go on YouTube just to find out the song I used, which was played during Terra's sort of birthday party celebration. Really, the music is just really forgettable and doesn't really come into play in helping the, you know, the movie at all. And that, I think, also hurts ultimately why this movie just feels good, not great. Again, it's that, you know, music can be something that can help amplify emotion and amplify what characters are feeling and amplify the story in general, and it's just not there. So I thought, definitely, I didn't really like the music. I didn't like the real lack of anything with the score of adding to the emotional environment of this movie. So overall, I actually like this movie. As I, you know, go into final thoughts, I like this movie. I think overall why it's good is that it captures the spirit of the Judas contract. And I keep going back to that, but for good reason. It captured the spirit of the theme that the Judas contract, I think, did well. That theme of family, of Teen Titans. Basically, why are they a family? This is why we're a family. You know, this, as I may mention before, loving each other even when they betray each other. But that also adding to why Terra's betrayal hurt so much. Terra's story, I think, at least the spirit of it, is definitely captured very well in this movie. And overall, it's just, again, I didn't mention this yet, but like there's at the end to where, you know, Damien's on the roof, and Raven comes to him, and she has a puppy dog. It's like, this is why I'm a Damian Wayne Raven shipper right now. But again, it goes back to that idea of family. And it's a theme that they keep playing with, talking about over and over again. But they do a well enough job to where it doesn't feel like they're hitting you over the head with it. And that's why I like this movie. Again, I love the story. I love the themes. And, you know, I think that they do enough diving into character psychology to make it a very enjoyable watch. And like I said, a very good spiritual adaptation of the Judas Contract. But at the same time, lack of a really good score, some shortcuts on animation, and it just adds to this feel of like, this should have been episodes of a television series. Like, they have the makings of a good Teen Titans animated series, a new one, here, in conjunction to, like, I don't see any reason why there can't be a Young Justice and a Teen Titans animated series that's maybe based in the movie universe that they can't do. But yeah, that takes it down because, like, it doesn't feel as epic as it should. So that makes it good, not great. So end of the day, I give Teen Titans a 3.5 out of 5. It's a really good animated movie, but not great. It's a great spiritual, I think, successor to Judas Contract. But again, that epicness is just not there. So 3.5 out of 5 for me for Teen Titans Judas Contract. And that's it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. I hope you enjoyed it. Next episode, we will be finishing our look at Teen Titans. I'll let you know what we're doing in just a second. But first, remember that, of course, you can email us at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. Remember to check out all our other content, including Shintegra Girls. He's back doing Warhammer videos. And of course, my other podcast, CM Jews Wrestling Reviews. We're doing SummerSlam all this month. And of course, remember to check out all our friends on the cyber of the site. And with that, like I said, next week we finish our 3-episode look of the Teen Titans with a look at we don't have access to the actual Teen Titans series, but we do, or at least I do, have access to a vacation to Tokyo, because next week we finish our Teen Titans look with Teen Titans Trouble in Tokyo. And until next time, my Toonami generation, find cover. Stay gold.
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.